Namaste. Good morning. It's wonderful to be with you this morning. So we'll begin by centering and taking a few breaths just to be really present in this moment. So closing the eyes and taking three deep, full breaths. So, with the three deep, full breaths, breathing into your innermost being, and as you connect to this here within yourself, just feeling yourself very present in this moment, breathing in open awareness and breathing out, centering, relaxing into this moment. And as you continue breathing, allow yourself to feel the presence that is yourself here right now. Just feeling the breath rising and falling naturally, effortlessly. And as you continue breathing, bring your awareness to awareness itself. That here in this moment you are present, you are aware, you are awakefully conscious here now. This means you are present, alert, engaged in this moment. Now, notice as you continue to be very present, aware of this, which is awareness in this moment, consciousness in this moment, notice how this consciousness actually is always here. Clear, silent, calm. It's the light in which everything is seen and experienced. And this remains constant. So even though your breath is rising and falling, you, awareness, are always here, unchanged, untouched, always still, always present. Life's events are coming and going. Each moment is coming and going. But you, this essence of being, is always here. Take a deep breath into this. Notice that it is innermost being, yet at the same time is all open, all expansive. It is boundless. And everything is connected and contained within this. Feel its calm. It's clarity and certainty. It is steadfast, yet light. And as you feel this, take another breath into your innermost being. And gently affirm to yourself, I am here. And as you feel yourself fully here now, notice that inner stillness, calm and presence, and you are awakefully aware, relaxed in this moment, centered, open and receptive. As you take a deep breath into your body, feeling yourself relaxed in this moment, and gently open your eyes. So thank you for being here. Namaste. Zaisha, can I hand over for you to present some of those questions from our lovely people here today, wherever you are, all around the world?
Yes, certainly. The first question this morning, what is that which reincarnates and what happens after an enlightened person dies? And then it says, where does he go? But I'll say he or she. And what does he do or what he or she do?
Well, I think the first part of the question was, what reincarnates? What incarnates? Can you just repeat that, Saisha?
Yes, that's right. What is that which reincarnates?
Well, look, this is it's an interesting question, and I think it's the very typical nature of the human mind to want to define everything and give it exact definition. So I'm going to answer it in a fairly summarizing fashion, I guess, without getting into great detail, because actually when we start talking about what is incarnated and what we are, we can enter into the realm where duality and definitions just don't serve. So as a general reference, what incarnates? Well, we are always essence. We can call that spirit. So that's the very life force, consciousness, which is all energy. And this all energy field, let's for simple purposes refer to this as source or God, God consciousness, actually manifests by way of different vibrational frequencies. So the all infinite source remains without distinction or definition, yet contains within it the wave frequencies and behaviors that take on definition. So it's these wave frequencies that take on very condensed vibrational field that come into form. So what appears as formless concentrates into what appears as form. So that's what's actually incarnating, the infinite, all same one being, which manifests and appears as individual beings. And so if we follow the vibrational fields and frequencies, we come to understand that, yes, we can give some distinction to the different frequencies, which is why we refer to God or source consciousness, soul, being the stream which is pre-form, and that stream has more unique, distinct features, characteristics, which is why we can refer to reincarnation, because it's that stream that is condensing and coming into a manifest form and then emerging again beyond the form. What we call death continues as a stream and incarnates again. And, the second part of the question, enlightened. Look, I think this is a really interesting one because, again, as I pointed out, the tendency of the human is to want to put things in very specific definitions and categories. And the mind doesn't like it when we have different versions of that. But guess what? That's life. Life is diverse, infinitely so. There are multiple versions of what is happening and what does happening. Yes, there are tending to be very particular patterns within the play of manifestation. So when it comes to enlightened beings, is it that such a being would never incarnate again? No. such a being actually of great vast consciousness is going to incarnate for the purpose of catalyzing greater awakening and consciousness for those that are still in that process. So I guess it's very relative, those particular instances, like I say, can vary and change accordingly. So I think it's just really important not to want to get very fixed parameters around these definitions of, you know, what constitutes an enlightened being, or what is an enlightened being going to do to incarnate or not incarnate, or, you know, leave the cycle of birth and death altogether. Which, by the way, is quite impossible, because life and death are the eternal life field anyway. It's just the play, the behavior of the infinite consciousness that is. That infinite consciousness is going to continue behaving in the same fashion, just in different versions. So, thank you for that interesting question.
Yes, thank you for the enlightened answer. The next question is, I think you've already answered it, but there might just be something you might want to add. I wanted to know something about the soul and the body energetic awareness. What are they?
Soul and body energetic awareness. Well, I think I already gave a bit of a reference to soul before, and that is that it's the vibrational frequency which precedes the gross frequency of body-mind. And I liken this to the metaphor of the ocean, that the ocean is, you know, if we refer to that as an endless ocean, that's God or source consciousness. So the infinite non-distinct field, which contains within it the behaviors and the elements of distinction. So that vast infinite ocean contains within it all the drops of every possible expression, and those drops are constantly recirculating and tending in certain currents and streams, and then those currents and streams actually concentrate to become the wave that appears at the surface, what then appears as an incarnate form. So from the implicit or formlessness, the energy concentrates through the different frequencies, and that's where we would refer to stream, what I refer to as stream, which is actually the soul, which then comes into form. And the form, of course, is temporary, ephemeral, because the play, the nature of what appears as form is constant flux, so it's constantly changing and entropic. That means it's always dissipating. So it comes into form, but at the same time is dissipating. So that's probably what we'd refer to as soul. Now, energetic body is a more present awareness to our vibrational field, where we are vibration, we are energy. And if we have a greater state of presence and awareness to what we are, if we're less distracted and less attached to identification and definition, then we have a more direct conscious experience of our whole vibrational field, which again, of course, has different vibrational frequencies, which is why we can distinguish the chakras and the aura compared to the gross body. I think that's
Thank
probably
you.
About all, to keep it simple.
Thank you, Asara. Next question. Why do I always feel uncomfortable around others? How does a person truly overcome crippling social anxiety? So maybe a bit more of a personal question, but...
Yes, personal, and I guess sadly so quite common. There are a lot of people that do suffer a sense of anxiety and discomfort in social circumstances. And I do see that, of course, there's all sorts of underlying conditions that are occurring for each individual uniquely. Having said that, there are some general patterns which tend to be occurring for people that do experience this intense form of anxiety. And my great compassion for you and for anyone that does experience this, because fundamentally, our nature, our human nature, is to want to belong, to connect, and to feel a sense of belonging. Now, I have observed that people who have this intense anxiety around others and social settings, there are two very particular dynamics which are present. One is that these particular individuals tend to be highly, highly empathic. And that means with a really heightened level of empathy, such individuals are overstimulated and have an sensory stimulation occurring. So there's just this intense sense of registering all the different feelings and thoughts underlying what's happening. And that stimulus, that high level of stimulus, causes the anxiety, because the individual is struggling to digest or to make sense of all of the stimulation that they're picking up on. So it literally is an overwhelm. Now, the second factor that goes alongside that, when individuals are highly, highly empathic, is very commonly such individuals haven't had the tools to be able to establish a very strong core self presence. So it's very difficult for them to actually distinguish a sense of autonomy compared to all the signals that they're picking up, which means that the individual, by feeling overwhelmed, tends to recoil and retract and want to shut down or avoid that setting, because they struggle to maintain their own autonomous field. So the third point, which I already raised, is that every single different person who experiences this high level of anxiety is going to have other underlying factors, core conditions and fears that are contributing to this pattern of anxiety as well. Nonetheless, if such individuals learn how to moderate the intensity of the stimulation that is sensed, whether consciously or unconsciously, because remember, a lot of that, an individual isn't even realizing that's why they're feeling such overwhelm. There's not a conscious recognition that actually they're picking up on the stimulations of everyone else and everything else going on around them. So by being aware of that and learning how to moderate one's sensitivity, and through practices which are actually for relieving stress, it's about soothing the energetic field. So correct breathing rhythms can help to put the individual back into a more balanced conscious state rather than fight-flight mode. And that's why I recommend alpha breathing as a practice for every single person, because it helps put you back in that parasympathetic response where everything is in a receptive, aware, centered state. So that's very, very important. And from there, learning how to establish a sense of anchoring to your own autonomous field. And for that, I recommend practicing having one's attention and energy built up in the Tan Tien. So I talk about these particular factors in Awakening You, and I do also impart these type of teachings in various programs that I deliver and retreats. But, you know, if you're not able to immediately come to a program like this, reading Awakening You my latest book, will give you excellent support and insight and methods that can really help you to establish a better state of calm and balance. So thank you for that question. Again, you know, I have the greatest compassion for anyone experiencing this. It's very, very challenging. And I wish you well to find that greater calm, even, like I say, through simple breathing methods to learn how to establish a more centered, balanced space of energy for yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Asara. The next question is for you. So, Asara, how do you deal with the fact that there's torture, misery, and extreme suffering going on each minute in the world?
This is a really interesting question, and it's one that has been presented to me time and time again. Because I guess people are very aware that in a state of oneness, everything is felt and sensed. And so usually the normal mindset would be, well, that's not okay. But when we are in a state of pure consciousness and we see ourselves as we are and we understand the nature of all things, we recognize all aspects of creation. And that means that there are, you know, beautiful birthing energies and there are destructive forces in the universe. Everything is coming and going, rising and falling through these cycles of life and evolution. Now, in terms of the moral concern, it certainly does not mean that by seeing and understanding the nature of the transience and, this coming and going, it certainly doesn't mean that one disregards the moral aspect. So in terms of morally, of course, I understand the necessity for us all to recognize and respect equally all beings. So of course, I would be encouraging and nurturing an awakening of consciousness to transcend the violations. But that doesn't mean that I feel stuck in that, in conflict with that. I see and I understand that the violations are synonymous with a less conscious stage of the human experience. And so there's great compassion in that respect. There is a peace and an acceptance and understanding that this is still but part of the human journey that is yet to evolve. So in that respect, there's the two sides where on the one hand there's a calm and a love and an embrace and acceptance for all things as they are and a compassion for all things as they are. And on the other hand, there's the will to serve for the evolution, for all of those transgressions to actually be transformed.
Thank you. The next question is, how do we learn to open up to love the self and how do we connect within while incorporating the function of relationship?
Well, that's a really big question. Let's do a weekend program on that, shall we? Or how about a whole retreat? And look, it's such a relevant question. Again, I just want to emphasize the depth and value you will find in the book Awakening You, and that in actual fact these two points are very, very pointedly addressed in that book. Why? Is because everything is self, everything is arising from self and within self. So there is only you wherever you go. So in terms of the learning to love self, well, actually, it's about learning to connect to the essence, the true nature of self, the true essence of what you actually are. You see, the reason people do not love themselves or life or existence is because there is an ignorance, a form of ignorance, a loss of seeing what you, life, actually truly is. And so from that is produced a whole lot of fear-based thoughts and judgments. And that then constitutes the feeling of not loving yourself. So interestingly, on the one hand, we can talk about practicing, for example, the seven attunements. Within the seven attunements, there, of course, is this aligning with the consciousness that is love. But as I've pointed out before, in actual fact, to truly love, we have to first be neutral. So the way to first be neutral is to connect actually to our essence, consciousness, awareness. You see, consciousness itself is totally neutral. Really, it's very much like a mirror. You know, you look at a mirror and you see that the mirror itself is neutral, and that is the very reason it can reflect any and everything that stands in front of it, because the mirror itself is completely neutral. So it can reflect back anything. Now, if you connect more to that which is neutral, consciousness, then clearly you begin to see life and all of its reflections simply as they are. This means that the judgments wash away. There's less judgment, there's less fear. There is a greater acceptance that everything is as everything is. It's not good, bad, right, wrong. Everything just is what it is. You are you. I am me. The person next to you is the person next to you. An orange is an orange. An apple is an apple. A pebble is a pebble. A diamond is a diamond. Everything just is its own beingness. But because the human condition is trapped in the construct of the mind, which wants to define everything, and it's very polarized and polarizing, it's dualistic in its nature, it's no longer neutral. It's in a constant state of bias. So to truly love yourself and other, and to truly meet other, then actually you do need to first really come back to total neutrality. And once you have that, then the grounds of relationship, the second part to your question, actually enters a whole different dimension. Because instead of projecting already first one's bias and judgments, instead of this projection, you actually see and meet other as they are. There's simply a seeing of other as they are. That doesn't mean you won't feel all of the different emotions. It doesn't mean you won't feel moments that are challenging or you know, tense in some degree, but what it means is you'll be with that. You'll see it as it is. And so relating will enter a much deeper level, a wholesomeness. And within that will be true communion and truly unconditional love. Now, I'm not suggesting unconditional love in the respect that, well, then you tolerate every single behavior or condition and therefore you should stay with someone if the conditions and the behaviors are actually toxic. No, I'm saying then you see it as it is and you accept it as it is, and that's actually unconditional. So it's all about the clarity of self-presence. If you can have that clarity in yourself, then everywhere you go, everything you experience will be encountered through that clarity.
Yes, beautiful. Thank you, Asara. This next question follows on straight from it, I think from a different angle, a bit more personal, but I think, again, as you say, universal these things are. I have been single for about 13 years now. And although I have dated a little, I have not found a deep, meaningful connection with anyone. I feel stuck and unsure of what I'm doing or not doing that is preventing me from finding someone.
Yes, unfortunately, there's a little more on the personal side with this sort of question. Of course, there are some universal elements, but you as a unique individual will have your own layers of different conditions or reasons as to why it actually is happening. What I want to comment on first is that very oftentimes we're conditioned into questioning why from the objection. Why is it this? You know, as if somehow it's bad and wrong or a deficiency. If we flip that on its head and instead ask, well, why is it actually right? Why is this actually perfect the way it is? Then you start to uncover a deeper, unconditional realm of reasons and purpose to your experience. Of course, that still can include that you are yet to bring into consciousness certain aspects of yourself in order to connect with others or to be clear about that. It could be that maybe you're actually not meant to extend as much depth of attention into a more personal, intimate relationship. Maybe your soul is wanting to achieve something else in life. But these are very subjective and relative possibilities. What matters is that you take on a different point of inquiry with yourself, because actually your being, at the deepest level, your soul knows why it is happening exactly correctly the way it is happening. And if that is because you need to bring something into the light of awareness, then that will be shown. If it is because there's a very specific purpose, that it's about timing or about some other meaning, that will be brought into the light of awareness. Now, what I understand makes this very difficult is that oftentimes the things that are yet to be brought into the consciousness remain very, very difficult to contact, because it's the nature of the subconscious to protect you from the things that it's afraid of. Because very often the things that are yet to come into the light of consciousness represent some kind of fear-based belief or fear-based experience which has been tucked away in the subconscious realm. So that's why I do very direct one-on-one work with people, because I'm able to help you get around and behind those mechanisms of protection of the subconscious. And I can see through that, so I can help lead you and guide you behind the walls that do come up with the subconscious mind. Otherwise, like I say, the important thing is that you take on a different angle of investigation for yourself. So I hope that that can encourage you in a new way to consider why or what's happening for you.
Yes, thank you. I certainly have some situations I could ask, why is it perfect, not why is it not happening? That could be very useful to flip it. Next question. If there are dimensions that are not bound by space and time, wouldn't these dimensions be the most blissful states, as they are not subject to the usual limitation?
Well, look, actually everything in its fundamental essence is blissful, because it is its own beingness. You see, it's only the mind that projects onto things subjectivity, gives it a definition, a polarized perspective, and through that, as I commented before, that state of bias produces light and dark, good and bad, positive and negative. And so our mind gets very attached to that, as if somehow, existence or whichever dimensions are occurring have to be totally free of our projected perception to be actually blissful. When in actual fact, everything is freedom, every single moment. It's only the human mind, the human perception, that takes on the idea that it's actually not already the state of bliss, the state of pureness, pure beingness. There's bliss in destruction, there's bliss in creation, what appear as opposing forces. So I really want to emphasize this because this is one of the greatest misnomers of the spiritual paths. And I say paths because there's many different ideas and teachings and tracks that people can follow, but pretty well most of them are following this track as if somehow we have to get away from existence as it is or to some other dimension to get to some bliss. It's not about getting away from anything other than our projected perceptions. And even then, you don't get away from them. You just see them for what they are. So this is why I always come back to how essential meditation is, because that puts you in a state of seeing. By connecting with consciousness, the essence that is awareness, you connect and reconnect to the ability to see things simply as they are. Seek truth and only truth, and all shall be given unto you. This is a saying I repeat quite often. And why? Because what it means is that if you seek truth, it means you see things as they are. You don't try to manipulate anything with your mind, your projections. You just see it as it is. And when you see everything as it is, you see freedom. You see perfection. You see, you feel bliss. You see that everything is a part of you. That's to really, truly have everything.
Yeah, thank you. This will be the last question this morning because we're almost at time. How can I trust life? How can I trust life, myself again, and have the courage to work towards my dreams when I don't have any control over the outcome and I don't feel I would be able to stand the pain that is not meeting expectations could bring? How does one surrender to life completely?
Yeah, what a powerful, deep and relevant question, because really this is the question for every single human being. And when you find the answer to this for yourself, you will be truly free in each and every moment. You will feel that there is fulfillment in each and every one of those moments. Yes, you can still have preferences, but when you are free of the attachment to those preferences, then you truly are okay. Then you truly are trusting. Now, as I said before, every single human being actually is really deeply, desperately seeking the answer to this. Even though I can give you an answer to this, it's still a signpost, and that signpost is pointing back to you. It's pointing back to your state of being and the possibility, the capacity for you to explore yourself more deeply, more thoroughly. So in a way, I've already answered this question. I talked about seeing everything as it is. And I talked about coming back to neutrality first. If you want to truly love yourself and accept yourself, because that's what you're talking about, being okay with your journey as it is, being okay with the fact you might have had certain goals or visions and they didn't work the way the mind wanted them to work, being okay with the fact that really you, I, we, this so-called body-mind is not in control. Existence is existence. Existence is being doing as existence is being doing. Yes, we are a function within it. Yes, we are an instrument of it. But existence is far greater beyond this one function. So really, we're like a wave in the ocean, you know. Yes, the waves are a function of the ocean, but they're certainly not manipulating or controlling the ocean. So by coming back to consciousness, that which is awareness within yourself, you can liberate a greater clarity of seeing and knowing. You do have within you the divine intelligence, so really does see, that does know the nature of yourself and all things within you, that divine intelligence is at peace, is trusting, is surrendered, and is participating willingly. That's the point of balance to find, is to be okay that everything is ultimately above and beyond one's own body mind, yet still be willing to be a function of that, still be willing to participate, to engage, to extend your will within that. If you're present as consciousness, if you're able to see each moment as it is, then you have trust. Only the mind is the shadow, what appears as a wall between you and the universe. It appears as that wall of doubt and fear and uncertainty. By coming back to consciousness, that wall comes down. You do see that everything is what it is each moment. And only then can you let go of the mind's necessity, you know, the mind's whole momentum to define everything to somehow prove what is or what isn't, to somehow make certain what you think. This is going to be this and that is going to be that. That'll never, ever bring you to trust. The only thing that brings you to trust is surrender into consciousness. Because being surrendered in that, you do see everything as it is. It's no longer a question of trying to even find trust. Because the true nature of the universe, life, existence in this manifest realm, it's actually dangerous. It is dangerous. I am challenging you to face that, to accept that. I know that can seem frightening. But the truth is, when you let yourself embrace it as it is, then you really know trust and freedom. Why do I say it's dangerous? Because at this seen level, everything is subject to change. Nothing is guaranteed. Everything is going to change. The clouds are at risk of dying into the ocean. Your mind is at risk of dying into consciousness. Your body is at risk of dying into the earth. Everything is at risk at this same level. But you, what you really are, underneath all of that, is unborn and undying. It is constant, whole, full. It is at one with everything that comes and goes. That, knowing that, being connected in that, is what constitutes trust. So I wish you well with your meditation, with your self-exploration. And again, I really encourage you, get my latest book. It is a companion. It is a guide. It will answer so many questions for you, and it will give you tools to become that experience yourself. That's my wish for you, that you become that experience yourself. So thank you for being here today, everyone, and for your questions and for sharing in your desire to live a more conscious, loving and aware life. So thank you and namaste. And thank you, Saisha. Thank you, team, for all of your efforts in being able to support and provide a webinar for everyone and that opportunity for people who are around the world or unable to attend live events. So thank you again.
Thank you, Asara, and namaste.